Today on the Inside Flap.
You got a massive secret history of the world. How do you keep track of it all?
There are some websites that people who have gone through every book, have every character and every situation and all that kind of stuff. So I refer to those. I can't remember.
You go online to find other people's research to keep track of your own stuff. That's hilarious.
That's smart.
Well, there are some obsessive people.
Yeah, there are.
Who have read the books again and again and again. Back in 2006, I went to my first romance writers.
Oh, wow. I bet that was fun.
Really?
Yeah. The Romantic Times Book Lovers Convention.
Wow.
And I became a regular there. Huh. It's, they finally wound up giving me an award just to
shut you up.
I'm a fan of fajitas.
You like when they bring out the sizzling pan?
Yep.
You know? Yeah.
I like to roll them up, make my own.
There you go. You like the show, the presentation.
Well, it just, gives you something to do.
The Inside Flap is available on demand every week on iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and around the world on theinsideflap.com.
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus. Welcome to the show. Seated to my right is Andrew Dowd.
Hello.
And across the table to my left is Laura Medicus.
Hey there.
We really appreciate you checking us out. We have a very, very special show for you today. This is the F. Paul Wilson Show. That's right. It is a show dedicated to the writings of F. Paul Wilson. We have a very special interview with F. Paul coming up. And anyway, thanks for joining us.
We are all avid F. Paul Wilson fans.
Yeah.
Dave and Laura have been reading F. Paul Wilson for about 20 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I got introduced by Dave and Laura to F. Paul Wilson about, 12 or, 13 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I've probably read about, 20, 25 of his books.
Uh-huh. He's written, at last count, 55 books,
wow.
Novels, 55 full-length novels.
Wow.
He's got another one coming out, Last Christmas this fall.
For so long that I honestly don't remember even where I was when I first read.
We were trying to remember. Can't remember.
I don't remember. But I remember eating them up.
Yeah. It's like he's always been a part of our lives.
He has.
Can't remember a time when he hasn't.
And the character Repairman Jack has always been there.
Exactly.
Seems like. Yeah.
So coming up in just a little bit, we will have that conversation with you or for you. It was... we talked to him just a little while ago, and he was fantastic.
Yes,
what a
so
great,
we're all
so
really
funny,
excited.
really, really great talk, insightful, fun, just a great chat.
He's been practicing. He's been a practicing physician.
Yeah.
A best-selling author.
Yeah.
Also a prodigious author, writer.
Yep. Yep. And still cranking them out.
I don't know how that's possible.
Yeah. And for me, I found that shocking because I thought he had given up his medical practice. When he started writing. So I am even more impressed with what he's accomplished.
I'm incredibly impressed.
He said he just retired in February. So amazing. Amazing. So we'll have that conversation coming up for you. We will, as usual, we will have book recommendations for you this week.
F. Paul.
They are all F. Paul Wilson books, including...
The
audiobook of the week is a F. Paul Wilson book. So hopefully, if you weren't a fan before this show, you will be guaranteed afterwards. Hope you enjoy it. So we've had a number of listeners ask about Amy Del Po, our Denver librarian, who has been joining us for some book talk. Well, I'm afraid to tell you, she is on suspension for recommending
true,
a
David,
Stephanie
not,
Meyer book.
That's not true.
What? No, I thought we said, no. No. She's taking a little break from the show. She's on hiatus as she adjusts to her new position with the Denver Public Library. Got
a big promotion. So congratulations to Amy.
Congratulations.
And, we're looking forward to having her back in probably July.
Yeah, she said she will be back with us in July once her hectic life settles down. So looking forward to that. Now, wanted to talk to you guys. We will be playing that interview with F. Paul in just a second. But first, I wanted to tell you guys,
By second, he means 20 minutes.
By second, I mean just a few minutes, because I have a story that that happened to me this week. Okay,
one of Dave's famous short stories.
So, listen. This week, I got a chance to accompany some of our music students at our high school to Elitch Gardens.
Which, oh, I didn't know it was music.
Mm-hmm, okay. Yeah, all choir kids, because they were going to perform at, you know, this was one of those field trips. It's a trip to an amusement park, but you got to come and you got to do like a 5-minute performance. Fun. And you get to spend all day at the park. So, little show and all day at the amusement park. Now, I was really excited because I do love roller coasters. You know, who doesn't love to get on a good roller coaster and get a little thrill ride? So we went down to Elitch's. You know, I met the bus there. I'm not about to ride the bus with the kids. I, you know, kind of got the truck there. Met them there.
Don't blame you.
And, you know, the last time we met, if you remember, the last time we went to Elitch's, we took Sylvia with us, our 12-year-old daughter. At the time, she was 12, had never been on a big roller coaster, but she kept talking about, we got free tickets, you know, through the Nuggets, and she was like, this is it. I'm going to ride a roller coaster. I'm so excited. This is going to be the time. We're going to do it. So we got to the park, headed over to the Mind Eraser, which is the big roller coasters
sounds,
in the park.
Sounds like a
right?
big one, yeah.
Yep.
There's a big line. Of course. So we get in line, and it's one of those deals where you go back and forth, and like, you know, like you're online at Wells Fargo or something. Although I don't know who goes inside of a bank anymore. Anyway, going back and forth, back and
Wells
forth.
Wells Fargo ride.
Back and forth, and over.
We'll take 1% of your money. Thanks.
Yeah, it'll just take more of a cut than that. But every couple of minutes, the coaster comes flying over our heads, you know, as it's winding and wending its way along. And Sylvia, as we got closer and closer to the front of the line, she kept looking up and she would stare at it and her eyes would get bigger and bigger.
Yeah. And honestly, tears were welling up.
You could see it coming. Uh-huh. You could see it's coming. And finally, after about, I would say, a good 30 to 40 minutes
probably
in line,
minutes of standing
we're just
there.
Near the steps leading up to the platform where you get on the coaster.
Yeah.
And then those tears that had been welling up, big crocodile tears came out, and she looked at us, and it was just,
no, senor! No, senor! No, senor! No,
oh,
no, senor!
There was going to be no... There was going to be no roller coaster riding that day. We had to do the shameful turnaround walk through the line backwards. You know, it was the... Excuse me. Yeah, we finally found a... a way to get out of there, but I think we did hit the swings. We hit the swings, maybe.
I think we did.
And then we got in line for a water ride, spent about 30 minutes in line for that, and then here comes the thunderclouds.
The park was shut down.
They shut down the park.
Yep.
We waited around for about another hour, and then went home. It was great.
How was your experience this time, Dave?
Okay, so let me tell you about my experience this time. So... Now, I got down there, and of course, there's about 30 kids, so we had three chaperones. It was the music teacher, the dance teacher, and myself, the theater teacher.
Okay, so 10 kids per adult.
So I had 11 kids.
Okay.
That's a good point. How did I end up with 11?
How did you end up
with 11?
And
the other teachers only ended up with 10. I don't know how many of that. Anyway, so I get all their phone numbers, and I put it on a big group chat list.
Okay.
There's only one kid who doesn't have a cell phone. Coincidentally, it is this kid.
The Inside Flap.
What kid?
That is Zuzu and Ty Lin.
Oh, one of those girls.
Ty Lin was there. Zuzu was also there. Zuzu
the inside
was the only one. That's both of them, Zuzu being one of them. But she was one of them who did not have her cell phone,
which is fine.
Our policy was that the kids, if they went somewhere by themselves, just made sure they have a buddy with them or they had their they had the phone.
And these are kids that are...
They're high school
16, kids. 16, 17, 18.
Right? Well, actually, no, because half the kids, and I'll get to this in a second, half the kids were middle school kids.
Oh. Okay,
so it's a 6 through 12. I only teach high school, but there's some younger kids there, too. So I sent out a big group text, hey, who's ready to ride some rides? And, you know, these kids are sending me back these memes and whatnot. And so we get in, and we head straight for the Boomerang, which is one of the big coasters in the park. Get in line, another back and forth, maze-like line, 34 minutes. We ride it. It was a great ride. We're high-fiving as we get off. We're all smiles, having a great time. Great start, you know, just a lot of fun. Everybody's really excited to be there. So we get off the roller coaster, and now half the group was just ahead of me, and half the group was just behind me, because you know how when you get into a coaster, sometimes the kids wanted to wait to get in the first car or whatever. So half the group runs over to the next ride, and I'm kind of in the middle with this kid, and I never met him. He's a middle school kid, and we'll go ahead and we're going to just call him Freddie for the purposes of this show. All right. Now, Freddie's a kid I don't know, but I really got to know him well this day. He's a good kid. He's one of those kinds of kids who kind of does his own thing. He's a pudgy kid, you know, but he's the kind of kid whose shoes are always coming untied. You know, his nose is always running. He's the kid who's got the ketchup stains on his shirt. His voice still hasn't developed yet, so he's got this real high-pitched kind of cracking voice, and he's got a lot of opinions on a lot of different things, and now he's got an audience, and that audience is me. So he's not afraid to tell me everything what's on his mind.
So sort of like a young Dave Menicus.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like a young Dave Menicus, exactly. So he's telling me that he wants to get a soda. I just want to get on the next ride, right? He's like, I want to get a soda. Let me get a soda. But he only has a $20 bill. And there's like a vending machine right there for these $4 sodas. Oh. But he's afraid to put his $20 into the soda machine.
And get quarters back.
Well, no, he thinks, he's convinced that this machine is going to take his money.
Oh.
So he doesn't want to risk losing $20.
20 bucks is a lot.
Sure, especially for a kid. Yeah. That's like $100. So, but I'm like, just put it in. You get a soda. And he's just going on and on and on about how wouldn't it be terrible if the machine took its soda, and what would happen if he had quarters, and wouldn't it be cool if you could buy a car using only quarters, and he wonders how many quarters it would take to fill up a wheelbarrow, and just went down this insane rabbit hole, and I'm just standing there nodding and smiling, and finally I say, oh look, here comes the rest of our group getting off the coaster. Let's join up with them. So we, of course, they actually stopped at the vending machine to get some sodas. But I'm like, let's just get in line and ride the ride. So now we're kind of like got half the group ahead of us. We're in line for the ride, and the other half is kind of behind us. So now we get in line. I'm looking around, and I don't see Zuzu. The one kid who doesn't have a phone with him. I don't see Zuzu anywhere. I ask the kids, and we're in line now, and I'm yelling ahead of me, hey, you guys seen Zuzu? Mm-hmm. And they're looking back at me like, who is this guy? You know, I'm like the only, it's a bunch of 15, 16-year-old kids and this older middle-aged guy with a scraggly beard yelling across the line. I don't know where Zuzu is. I'm yelling to the kids behind us in line, you guys seen Zuzu? No, we haven't seen. I'm texting the music teacher, the dance teacher.
Oh.
Of course, they don't text me back right away, so I'm not getting any response.
Could she be in the ladies' room?
I guess. Yeah. I mean, I don't know where she is, right? Because everybody's in line. Everybody who was in my group, all 11 kids except for her, are accounted for.
Gotcha.
So, Dave, this could be a good start to a horror story.
I've met Zuzu.
Absolutely, could be.
And
sweet
Zuzu,
kid.
She can take care of herself, though.
Well, yeah, exactly. So that's why I'm not.
I wouldn't be too worried.
I'm not
about
that
her.
Worried about it. The one thing that worried me is she didn't have a phone with her. So I just don't. It's nice to be able to know where everybody
know where
is. So, of course, the one kid who doesn't have one gets lost. All right, so anyway, so we start inching up the line. Now Freddie's standing next to me, and it's just me and Freddie, you know, and he's telling me now he's dehydrated. So he's pointing at about a couple hundred yards away. There's a snow cone cart nearby. Oh. And he's like, I bet I have time to go run over there. I could get a snow cone and eat it before we get to the front of the line. And I'm like, Freddie, first of all, you're not running anywhere. Second of all, we don't have time for you to go get a snow cone. Just wait. Wow. So now, of course, he's got to show me how dehydrated he is. He's like coughing and making all these noises, like sticking out his thumb. I'm like, Freddie, just calm down. Oh. Okay. And I'm still scouring, looking for Zuzu. So finally we get up to the front of the line. And he gets the last spot on the coaster, and I get the old chain comes down right in front of me, and I have to wait. So Freddie's ride ends, he gets off, I get on the ride, and so now it's 27 16-year-olds on this coaster and one guy in his 40s, you know, and it's just so, I just feel so awkward, but you know, whatever, I ride it.
Teacher.
It's a nice, and this was a Friday, so it was all school kids, so obviously I'm a teacher.
Yeah.
I ride the ride, fun ride. I get off, and as I'm walking away, here comes a text. It's the music teacher, and she says, Zuzu is with us.
Oh.
So don't worry about it. I'm like, cool. I walk over, there's a snow cone cart.
Is Freddy there?
There's no Freddy. Oh. Now, I found one kid, I've lost Freddy. So I text Freddy. He's got a phone.
Okay.
Nothing. I call Freddy. Straight to voicemail.
Oh, Freddy.
And now I'm like, where the hell could Freddy have gone in such a short amount of time? So I'm like F. Paul, you know, in the Pine Barrens. Uh-huh. I'm completely lost. So I start doing like ever-widening circles.
I'd be worried about Freddy.
Looking around. Yeah, Freddy is
Zuzu,
the guy.
Zuzu, I wouldn't have been that worried about. Freddy, I would be worried about Freddy.
He's a seventh grader. Freddy is the guy I got to worry about.
Right? Yeah.
I'm like, what do I do now? Do I start calling out his name or what? So I end up over by the boomerang. And lo and behold, here's Freddy. He's standing, or he comes running up. I'm by the vending machine. He comes running up. And he's running towards the vending machine. I'm like, Freddie, where were you? He said, well, the line for the snow cones was too long. So what he did, he went and got change for his $20 bill.
Oh, smart.
So he could buy himself a soda pop.
Okay.
I was like, well, I called you. He said, sorry, my phone died. You know, which is constantly happening to these kids. I have no idea what kind of batteries they have in their phones, but it's always happening. Their phones always die.
You're either the kind of person that has a fully charged cell phone, or it's got 20%.
That's a good point. Yeah, Sylvia's is always at 20%. And you should see these kids, by the way. For those of you who don't know or who are not a teacher or haven't been in the classroom lately, every teacher has to have a, what do you call it, a control strip, a power strip in the front of their classrooms.
Because
the first thing the kids do is they run right up, plug it, half the students, I would say, plug in their phones so they're charging in the class.
A little disturbing. And
they all carry chargers with them along with their phones. All right. So anyway, so Freddie pulls out a $5 bill. So now he's got a five. Throws it in the machine.
Oh, please tell me Freddie gets some change.
You won't believe what happened. No. You cannot make this up.
Oh, no.
He's punching the Pepsi button.
Yes.
And there is no Pepsi coming out of the machine.
Oh, Freddie.
He hits the Mountain Dew button, the iced tea button.
Oh.
The machine has eaten his $5 bill.
You are kidding me.
I am not kidding you. No.
Just what he feared.
Exactly what you, what he feared happened. He lost $5.
So how did you feel?
What did you do?
Well, immediately he's like, we got to go tell somebody about this. And I'm like, Freddie, you don't understand the way the universe works. That $5 is gone. But of course, I can't tell him that. So I'm like, all right, well, let's go see. So we go run over to, there's like the game booths are nearby. So he's trying to tell the kid at the, like a pitch a penny booth that he lost his $5. And the kid's looking at him like, sorry, bud. Sorry about your bad luck. I don't know what to tell you. So now Freddie, and of course, he's still dehydrated. He still has not had anything to drink.
There's water fountains at this park.
I already pointed at him some water fountains.
He doesn't want a sweet, refreshing treat.
Freddie needs his sweet.
Yeah.
So I'm like, now he's hungry. So now he tells me he's hungry.
Mm.
So I'm like, and still, I just want to ride another ride. All the other kids have dispersed. You know, they're all riding other rides. We got another about an hour and a half before the kids have to perform. I just want to ride a ride, but no, Freddie's hungry. So I'm like, all right, Freddie, where do you want to eat? So we go over to where all the
other kids at this point.
Oh, they're in their own little groups. You know, they're riding rides.
Okay.
They're in line. They were at the Twister. I think they all went down to the Twister 2 or whatever, the old wooden roller coaster.
Okay.
Which I really, by the way, really wanted to ride.
I hate the wooden roller coasters.
I know you do, but it's that fear factor, you know, of maybe this thing could really fall down. It's, you know, so
I feel it.
So Freddie, so there's a million places to eat. He points at the French fry food truck with the longest line in the entire park. So it's got a line that's longer than half of the rides in this park. So of course we go over there, we wait in line for about 20 minutes to get a, I spent $12 for a thing of French fries and a Mountain Dew.
Mm.
And then we have to sit down, we eat our French fries, eat our Mountain Dew, and you know, by then it's time to perform. We had a meet and practice for the performance. You know, the kids sounded great. Freddie got lost again after the performance, but I found him, dragged him by his collar back to the music teacher before heading out, having spent, I would say, approximately 2.5 hours in lines. I rode two rides and was out $12 for fries and a soda.
I feel bad for Freddie in those $5, though.
You know, it's always tough when you're a kid to have something like
it's
that,
because
that's a
real,
that's a punch in the gut. You
know, it's something weird that you just don't forget when you're a kid and that happens to you.
I feel like it's the universe, like he willed that on himself, though. He knew it was going to happen, and it happened.
Now, is he the sixth grader?
I think he's in seventh. He's a seventh grader, maybe eighth grader. I think a seventh grader.
Well, it's important life lessons as well. You know?
I guess, but what are you going to learn from that?
Well, but you know, part of it is the teacher. I mean, I mean,
Are you talking about me now.
Yeah, yeah. If you took $5 out of your wallet every time a kid like Freddie made a mistake,
right? Yeah.
I mean, there'd go your whole paycheck.
Yeah.
I will say though, it wasn't Freddie's fault. He just trying to get a drink.
Yeah. No, it wasn't his fault. He just wanted a drink.
Yeah.
And
I would have bought him the drink if I was standing next to
him. I would have, but I didn't want to lose my money. You know, I had a credit card.
I wouldn't have gone back to that machine.
I see, yeah.
That's for sure.
Well, he had to change from the 20. He had enough for fries.
So is this where Freddie, his life takes a turn and he starts a life of crime, vandalizing and robbing vending machines.
That's true. It's true.
I don't know. I had to check back in with Freddie.
See Freddie in a couple years in your very own classroom.
That's true. That's true. I'd take him. He's an interesting kid. That's for sure.
You know what I'd like to hear Freddie's version.
Of the events.
I would too,
that's
but that's
valid.
I stuck to the facts. Just the facts. So how was your guys' week? Good week?
Good. Yeah. Highlights talking to F. Paul Wilson really today.
Yeah, that was a big highlight. And speaking of, shall we just get right to it?
Well, I think we should mention we had snow again here.
We did.
We did.
Two days ago, another 4 inches of snow.
I found out something, just a small tidbit about our house. So we had the next door neighbors had us and some other neighbors over for a little get together.
Yeah.
And one of the neighbors, I don't know how this came up, but she like pulled me aside. We were talking about like the previous owner of our house.
Yeah.
And we're fairly new. Been here 5 years.
About 5 years.
Yeah.
4 or 5 years.
Yeah, 5 years. And everyone else has been here longer than us. And she said, the guy who owned your house before.
I have not heard this before.
He went through a really messy divorce when he lived here.
Oh.
His wife at the time put raw shrimp into the vents of your house. After she found out about his infidelities.
Oh.
Plural, infidelities.
Whoa.
Yes. Raw shrimp into the vents.
Raw shrimp in the vents.
Yeah.
Do you think, I wonder, was that worse than putting a dead fish in the vent? Or maybe it's because they're smaller. She could have.
I don't know.
Oh, man.
Love hath no fury.
I'd never heard of anything like that before, though.
That is insane.
Yes. And insanely kind of clever, because you could probably fit them pretty easily.
That's a good one. And just the whole time, you're like, what
you're
is
like,
that
where is
smell?
That smell?
Except you're living in the same house.
Well, I would assume she, I know, I had that thought probably, too. Like logistically
she
wise.
She must have done that right before she
left. Did she do it? And then she scurried out with her bags.
Because remember when we bought this place, the guy was living with his sister.
She
his sister
said his
was
sister
here.
Moved in shortly thereafter and lived with him for a while. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
I have not smelled shrimp here.
Well,
since
we had our vents cleaned.
We did.
But they didn't smell before.
No,
either.
They didn't smell.
I would imagine he had to have a very good cleaning afterwards.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. Interesting. I'd also like to know if it was winter time, so the heat would have been on, because that would have really gotten. Yeah.
I can't imagine.
You
nasty
imagine?
Stuff.
Yeah.
Nasty stuff. That's a good.
That was my little tidbit.
You know, the seniors just had their senior prank day. It would have been a good prank for them.
That would have been a long con, though, and perhaps.
You know. But that's one where you don't want to stick around
that's
for the
true.
Smell. You want to see, but you do want to see the reaction.
You'd want to see the reaction. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
All right, well, let's get right to it. So earlier today, we spoke with F. Paul Wilson. He talked about Repairman Jack. He talked. We talked about New Jersey. We talked about Mexican food. We talked about everything with him. It was a great talk. And let's go ahead and listen. Here is F. Paul Wilson.
Yeah, I tend to always go to the Stokers. I go to a lot of conventions in the course of a year. back in 2006, I went to my first romance writers.
Oh, wow. I bet that was fun.
Really?
Yeah. The Romantic Times Book Lovers Convention.
Wow.
And I became a regular there. Huh. It's they finally wound up giving me an award just to
shut you up.
But when I first went, it was Barry Eisler and I were the only males.
Oh, wow.
And
it sounds like it could be a dream. Were you married at the time?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. So different experience then.
Yeah. But the benefit was that we got a lot of attention.
Okay. Okay.
And my publisher sent down like 500 copies of Hosts.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. You know, I told them I was going. They said, "What? These romance."
Hey, you never know. I mean, they might want to read some other genre, you know.
Well, the thing is, romance started doing paranormal and started doing thrillers and stuff like that. And Heather Graham, and I met her and some of her friends, and she said, "You got to go."
That's awesome.
It's only in Pittsburgh this year. I'll go. And so I
– That's a short drive down, yeah.
Said, we'll check the warehouse. If we have a lot of something, we'll send them. They sent 500 copies, which we gave away because Heather has a dinner every time. We gave away at the dinner, and my backlist exploded.
Wow. Really?
Huh. Yeah.
That's exciting.
So it was
who knew?
One of the best things I've ever done. And I also made some friends that will probably be friends for life.
Oh, that's great.
That's nice people.
Good. Well, let's talk a little bit about your Ice Trilogy. Now, I loved these books. I cannot tell you how much I loved them. I would describe them, to me, I felt they were the X-Files meets the A-Team. So we get a – what do you think about that? Do you like that one?
Who's Mr. T?
Rick, of course. I mean, his brother from another mother, don't you think?
Right.
You don't get the full squad. I'm assuming if you're going to add to the series, you can always add, you know, the face character.
Yeah.
I think Laura can sub in as face, maybe.
I loved writing them.
Yeah.
And I'm going to leave it at a trilogy for now.
You are. Okay.
I certainly left it open where I can come back.
Oh, for sure.
It has a nice symmetry now with the three books and, I don't tie up everything, but the fact is, you know, Rick knows a lot more now than he did at the beginning.
Right.
I definitely got attached to those two characters.
Yeah, they're great. I love the repartee between the two. And I think at one point you made a little remark about how Rick and Laura rhymes with Nick and Nora. I don't know.
Right.
Was that something you planned from the beginning or did that?
No.
Yeah. It's fun. Really?
The thing is, you have to stay ahead of your readers.
Sure, right. So you have your.
So I wanted to bring it up before they.
That's smart.
That's smart.
The thing is, if I have a character bring it up, then they're not, you know, doubting things. You know, they're not asking questions like, you know, is he trying to, you know, make him look like Nick and Nora? Well, if a character, I have a character say that, then they say probably he didn't.
You had them off at the pass. He nipped that in the bud. That's smart. Also,
or he had his tongue in cheek when he did it. You know,
right, yeah. Exactly. Well, it worked. It worked. I always pictured Rick. I kind of pictured him as Jack's older, tougher brother. I mean, I don't know.
That would work.
Yeah, I think so. I noticed.
I made him different in that, Rick has the
background,
official training and the background, and, you know, he's still connected, whereas Jack is totally unconnected.
Right. Yeah, no, it was a good, a great balance between the two. I also noticed that Laura's daughter is a Mets fan. Are you a big Mets guy, are you?
I was originally a Brooklyn Dodgers fan.
Okay.
But then they moved away, and I never forgave them.
Right. Yeah. A lot of people didn't, yeah.
Yeah.
You must have been – so when they drafted Paul Wilson with the number one overall pick, I mean, that was pretty crazy, huh?
Well, yeah.
I think you had the better career, though, let's face it.
Oh, yeah. They also had Mookie Wilson.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, sure. The 86 World Series. Yeah, who can forget Mookie Wilson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, my wife taught kindergarten down here at the shore, and Mookie lived down here.
Oh, really?
His son was in my wife's class.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's cool.
So how many times did you just happen to drop by and pick up your kid?
A few times.
Yeah, okay.
So, Paul, the Jersey Shore is a big place. My family's been going to Brigantine in Atlantic City for about 90 years. So are you close to there?
Oh, I'm way north. I'm just west of Asbury Park.
Okay.
Oh. It's called Ocean Township. Hmm. Yeah. So the thing is, I'm far enough away that when a tsunami comes, you know, I'll have oceanfront property. But I'm 3 miles from Asbury Park, so I can, you know, all the restaurants there. I was just in there last night. I was eating at a Mexican restaurant last night. So they have great restaurants. It's a great scene there.
What did you enjoy? What did you enjoy for dinner? Do you get the taco plate? What do you get? Burritos.
I usually, you know, I mean the usual guacamole I'm a fan of fajitas.
Mm-hmm. Ah, all right. You like when they bring out the sizzling pan?
Yep.
You know, yeah.
I like to roll them up, make my own.
There you go. You like the show, the presentation.
Well, it just, you know, gives you something to do.
Were you? I picture you as a boy, just interested in writing. Did you write an awful lot when you were a kid?
I think I started in second grade.
Oh, that's young.
I remember in second grade, you know, we had these reading groups, mm-hmm. and we were doing the Dick and Jane stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I had started writing a haunted house story.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And so I asked the teacher if I could read it, never dreaming that she'd say, go ahead and read it. Because I hadn't finished.
Oh, no, really?
So I started reading it. And when I got to the end of what I had read, I started winging it.
Oh.
And it was pretty obvious that I hadn't. And so she said, Paul, when you finish it, you know, come back and we'd love to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were all pulling our chairs back to where they belong. And I'm really embarrassed because I got caught. But these kids coming up to me and saying, you know, well, what happened to the guy with the bow and arrow? And was that a real ghost? And I said, oh, I got him.
I got attention. Yeah.
It's a great feeling.
It is, I bet.
But I've always liked to tell stories. And I wrote all through high school and never showed it to anybody because it was pretty bad.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, even my early stuff at the end of college, I was trying to break in with a short story. And I kept thinking they're just rejecting it because they've never heard of me, you know.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, I said, if Harlan Ellison's name was on this, they'd buy it. So you got to tell yourself these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep you going.
I like it. It works. Yeah.
Finally, John Campbell bought one of my stories for Analog. Huh. And then I started selling. But the thing is, I went back and looked at those earlier stories, and they were rejected for very good reasons.
It's painful.
Yeah.
And that was part of the short story that you sold?
The one at age 7?
Oh, yeah. not that one.
Not that one. Yeah. I like a good haunted house story.
Ratman, the early years, right?
Yeah, Ratman was my first sale.
Yeah.
My second published story, but my first sale.
Cool.
And what was that feeling like?
Well, yeah, it was bittersweet because Campbell was telling me why he was rejecting my stories, which was sort of my writing class. Yeah. I never took a writing course.
Hmm.
Huh. And when I finally got the check for the acceptance, it came from the accounting department. So there was no note like, you know, good job, kid, or, you know.
Attaboy.
It was just
go get him.
5 cents a word. $350 or something like that.
Right. So sort of like Peter Parker selling photos.
Yeah.
Right.
Did you ever think about doing a book about writing?
No. I mean, there's some really good practical ones out there.
Mm-hmm.
I teach at the Borderlands boot camp every year.
Oh, okay.
And I teach at the Thriller Writers Thriller Fest.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
But, you know, Stephen King did a good one.
Yeah, I've read that one.
David Morrell did an excellent one.
Oh, I didn't know Morrell did.
Morrell, really? Huh.
Yeah, it's very good. Hmm. And Tom Monteleone did, you know, The Idiot's Guide to Writing a Novel, which is an invaluable, like, step-by-step type of thing.
Right. Huh.
My own agent did, you know, writing the blockbuster bestseller, Al Zuckerman. So, I mean, there's so much out there. I don't know how much I could add.
I gotcha, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're still enjoying writing fiction, so, you know, at this point.
Yeah, I'm not a nonfiction writer. I mean, yeah. I do a little essay or something every once in a while on the website.
Right.
Yeah.
I've done a couple on the Beatles and things like that, but it's more memoir than, you know, analysis.
Oh, I'd read a...
Oh, sure. I think we're all clamoring for a Paul Wilson memoir. When's that one coming out? Come on.
I live a very poor, prosaic life. It would put you to sleep.
Well, sometimes we need nighttime reading, too. Come on.
I sat here and typed.
Your first novel was Healer, science fiction.
Yeah,
and then you changed after that to writing more in the horror genre. But what made you change to writing more horror than science fiction?
Well, I wrote three science fiction novels and a novella in the 70s, but horror was my first love. Always been my first love. Monsters, Lovecraft, Bradbury's horrific stuff.
Yeah.
So, but there was no market for it. You know, there was a couple of little magazines.
Right.
But. They paid in copies. Science fiction was my second love. I mean, if there was a comic book as a kid that had a rocket ship and a dinosaur, you know, it got my dime.
Yeah, sure.
So then when King opened up the horror genre, I said, okay, I got to do it. Mm. Now's the time. Yeah. But everybody was doing small town horror. Everybody was doing Salem's Lot. And Carrie,
right.
And all that kind of stuff. I would say
the opposite.
Do the opposite. Yeah. So I did The Keep, which was more of an international thriller type of thing.
So right. good.
Than so the small town horror, and it was a smart thing for me to do because every publisher who saw it wanted it because they weren't seeing that.
Even made it onto Growing Pains, an episode of Growing Pains. I saw that recently. That was pretty
funny. Awesome. Some of these people who watched it.
I know.
I swear. I never would have seen that little bottle of water.
No, I know. Yeah, I never noticed it, too.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, no. Exactly. Yeah.
Even when they had the screenshot, I'm looking and saying, what are they looking at?
I did the same thing.
I'm looking at the faces. It's just to see how people are, you know, reacting as they're saying their lines, not looking at their feet.
No. I wonder if, like, people after that Starbucks cup was spotted, they went frame by frame just to be the ones that, aha, found it. I spotted the water bottle first, you know.
Well, that was a little more obvious.
No, yeah. The Starbucks cup was absurd. I have no idea how that one got past the editing.
Getting careless.
Yeah, indeed. What I really loved, I loved the little Easter eggs you put into the Ice trilogy. Now, I noticed a couple in Panacea. There's he gets a gun from a sporting shop in Manhattan, uh-huh. I think was how you put it. And then there was a reference to the kicker. I think a book written by the kicker. And then there was
it was the drugs, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Someone was had been addicted to Berserk. From All the Rage. Is that fun to put stuff like that in there? Because that really, for me, it was just a lot of fun. It gives me a little, look at that. That's Abe's story. You know?
It's like that type of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Rub your hands together.
Yeah. So much
But it's
fun.
Also, I try to make it so it's, if you're just picking up Panacea, it doesn't matter to you.
No, exactly. Right.
They don't get in the way. You don't have to know what they mean.
You don't have to know anything before reading that.
If you're a Jack fan or you're an adversary cycle fan, and you pick it up and you read it, you say, oh, it's connected.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Because I always love it when I spot those things as a reader.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you pass it on. Yeah.
Well, speaking of those connections, we're all wondering this. You got a massive secret history of the world. how in the world do you keep it all? How do you keep track of it all? I mean, there's so much to it, and you keep writing books and weaving stuff, more stuff into it. Do you have like a whole room? I'm picturing like Stranger Things, you know, when they got all the stuff posted up on the walls. Do you have like something like that? I mean, how do you keep track of it all?
It's all in my head.
Really?
Yeah. It's there are some websites that people who have gone through every book, have every character and every situation and all that kind of stuff. So I refer to those. I can't remember.
You go online to find other people's research to keep track of your own stuff. That's hilarious.
That's smart.
Well, there are some obsessive people.
Yeah, there are.
Who have read the books again and again and again. And I can't reread stuff. I mean, by the time I hand the final thing in,
you're done with it.
Oh, I mean, I've read it so many times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And close reads, you know, because I'm always looking for the typos. Mm-hmm. And then I just want to move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't even listen to the audio.
Really?
Huh. Nah, I mean, it's just – I finally did. I listened to Dark City just to see – how the reader sounded.
Okay, yeah.
And how he did Abe's voice and stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
I forget who the guy was. He was good.
I wonder if this, because I just listened to The Tomb. I'm going to talk about it later on the show. In fact, we're devoting the whole show to F. Paul Wilson. So we'll be talking. Yes, we are. Yes. We're going to be recommending some of your earlier work. And we always do an audio book pick of the week. And my audio book pick of the week will be The Tomb. So there's your homework.
Nathan Knapp, I think his name is. He's been doing all the Jack books.
Yes, on YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really like hour long discussions.
Yeah. Well. Really
good. Again, I can't listen to that.
Yeah. I mean, Who's got the time? Sure.
I know the books. Right. And yeah, even though I'm sure they're complimentary because he's a fan.
Right.
Yeah. But I tell everybody about them. In
of course. Well, that's all you can do, promote. And, you know, that's nice.
Speaking of rereading, I just reread Midnight Mass.
Mm-hmm.
And
Yes,
and I really loved the character of Zev, and he reminded me of Abe. And both of these men just add humor to your books and warmth and wisdom. And your books stand out for me for a lot of different reasons from other thrillers, but in particular, you have humor in your books. And it's amazing to me to read a horrific vampire story and then I'm chuckling over something that this rabbi says to whatever and you know, the priest. And it's just really cool. I love the humor in your book. And is that something that you work at, or does it just come naturally, Paul?
No, I really work at it because unrelenting
darkness,
tension, and horror wears the reader out.
Right.
Yeah.
And you just need a little break. Mm-hmm. Just, all right, let's take a breather and maybe have a chuckle.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then let's get back to the serious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, ideally, I mean, my on screen, yeah, ideally. Mm-hmm. You know, it goes like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's like this and it's getting more and more attention and more and more attention, you know, your adrenal glands wear out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
I just saw John Wick yesterday.
How was it?
It's amazing action movie.
Cool.
But in Act 3, I had enough chop sake. And you know, going on and
I felt the same way about the second one.
The second one had that. Yeah.
It was the same. Just
cut it a little, fellas.
Yeah.
You know? But it has a great ending. I don't know if you haven't seen. I won't ruin it for you. But it has a great ending.
No spoilers. No.
I'd
spoilers.
Like to see it. Yeah, I liked the first one an awful lot.
Well, number 4 is coming in 2 years.
Oh wow!
Really?
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, speaking of the humor, even at the end of The Void Protocol, when, you know, you got this massive otherworldly creature and Rick and Laura, that, you know, the one-liners are flying fast. It's great to read. It really does.
You know, sometimes when you're – I hope people get some of the references,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the younger the reader, sometimes, they, you know, those things just go right over their head.
That's true.
I made a Pac-Man, you know, reference.
Oh, yeah. Love that. Yes.
I assume everybody got that.
I would think so.
It's sort of a cultural icon.
Yeah, I teach high school, and I know my kids know all about Pac-Man, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured that was a safe one.
I'm in the middle of Panacea. Started it last night. I'm halfway through it. And you also mentioned Hayden Panettiere, who...
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Oh.
Yeah, and so he's trying to explain how to pronounce his name.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's a very young reference as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As in the planetarium, not
yes.
in.
That's right, yeah, yeah. Now, also you have a lot in these books, we have some more cult action. Now, I notice in a lot of your work, especially the Repairman Jack stuff, we have a lot of cult talk. So I'm just curious if there's something about that blind faith devotion that you find appealing with these cults?
They're fun to work with in the sense that they're so monomaniacal, that you know they're so focused on doing something,
right?
And that you can have them do things that a normal person with a normal broader outlook would not do. There's idiot plotting, which it means in order for the plot to move forward, somebody has to act like an idiot,
right?
And I try to avoid that. Mm-hmm. I try to stay ahead of the reader and figure out what questions they're going to ask, you know, penetrating questions, mm-hmm. and then try to preempt them and sort of get to their question, answer their questions before they ask them.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Going back to that. Sure.
When they start asking questions, well, why did he do that?
Yeah, then you're in trouble.
And then they're out of the story.
Yeah, mm-hmm. totally.
And I don't want you out of my story. Yeah. I don't want you in there. Yeah. So, You got to preempt the reader and anticipate the questions they're going to ask. So that's why cults are fun, because you can say they did it because this is what they believe.
That's true. Yeah. Absolutely.
And so you go back and you make their beliefs consistent with the idiot thing they're going to do.
That's awesome.
Perfect.
So have you ever found yourself in a situation where you wish you had a real life repairman Jack?
I don't know if I can say yes on that, but not personally.
Right. There have
been things I've read in the paper.
Take care of it, Jack. Yeah.
In Legacies, when he dresses up as Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
To get back those. I mean, that came from reading about a bunch of kids with AIDS having all their toys stolen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying, I wish I could do something about that. Well, I can do it on paper.
That's right. That's right. And speaking of...
And that's beloved by the readers. And it's beloved by me, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Christmas, isn't the new Repairman Jack book the next one?
Hey, that's a great segue.
Thank you.
Yeah, The Last Christmas.
The Last Christmas. What a great title. Is that the final title?
Yeah. Putting the article "the" in there makes a world of difference.
I found that too.
That's really funny.
So it makes a great Christmas present. That's why it's being timed for the fall too.
Perfect. Where in the timeline is this one going to take place?
That's between.
Oh,
I thought you were going to say that's between you and your publicist.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah. I'm going somewhere else with that.
It's between Ground Zero and Fatal Error.
Okay.
Right. As in Christmas week of that December.
Oh, wow. I'm looking forward to that.
That sounds great.
Exactly a year after Infernal.
You want to drop any plot details about it?
It's a typical thing where...
there's nothing typical about these Repairman Jack books. Come on.
All right. Well, where there's a... there's two storylines.
Okay.
And, and they eventually merge or crisscross. And,
I see what you did there. Crisscross. Okay.
That's always fun to do is to see how you can get them to go together.
Cool.
But it brings back a lot of the characters. It introduces a new strange character.
Oh.
More for a one-shot type of thing.
Okay.
But I finally reveal who she is at the end.
Oh.
Some people might be able to guess who she is.
Sigourney Weaver? Is it Sigourney Weaver? No? Okay.
No.
Hayden Panettiere.
Right.
So when I was a kid, I grew up in the suburbs of Philly, And me and my brothers, we used to ride our bikes, I mean, all over the place. Any place we could ride our bikes, we rode our bikes. And so in Secret Histories, you write about the Pine Barrens. You know, write about young Jack riding his bike and you know, traveling around there. So I really liked, you know, how reminiscent that was of my childhood. But, you know, where does the Pine Barrens fit in your personal history?
We used to, I used to go to a day camp in the summers when I was smaller.
Yeah.
And they used to take us on camping trips into the Pine Lands, into the Barrens. And we heard all the stories about the Pineys and the Jersey Devil.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of lore there. And you'd get on one of these little streams and you'd paddle along and it just seemed to go on forever. And there's nothing but trees around you. And just like you could get lost here so easily. And then you hear about people who hunters who go in and never seen again. Mm-hmm. It always stayed in my head. And, you know, the fact that they say it's like 2 million acres.
Yeah.
And the fact that they say that, you know, there are places there that the human eye has never seen.
Wow.
Well, you know, that opens up.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, you tell me that. And it's, you know, like 60 miles from where Jack is living.
Yeah. Get, you got now, it. How can you not use like, that?
Yeah.
That's it.
Have you ever had any supernatural encounters, close encounters?
No. No. I did get lost in the Barrens once.
Did you really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you know,
I guess
I was there researching some of the books, and they have what they call a vanilla sky moves in, which is low overcast, blasts out the sun enough so where you, there's not even a glow as to where it is.
Wow.
So you don't know where north, east, or south is. It's, and you got these fire trails. And you know you came down that way, and you're going back, and then there's no tire tracks. Mm. And there's no litter. That's the thing that gets you.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Huh.
That means nobody's been there. So, you know, humans leave crap wherever they go.
Of course,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, we do.
You know, when you don't see litter, you're saying, oh, geez.
Now you're in trouble.
Yeah. Oh, but I managed to find my way out, and... But it was a little hairy. You know, you're looking at the gas gauge, making sure you got enough gas. And, but as for supernatural, no. It's one of those things where, gee, I wish.
Right.
But I'm such a skeptic that, you know, I can pretty much explain everything to my dismay.
Certainly, yeah. Well, we got to ask you, of course, is there any update about a possible Repairman Jack TV series, I think, was the latest I had heard. Anything?
Yeah, I communicate with Beacon Films once a month.
Okay.
And supposedly they have, you know, they have now a showrunner whose name would be instantly recognized.
Wow.
Which can be a good thing and a bad thing. Mm-hmm. In other words, you got to watch out for showrunners because sometimes they want to make it their show.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it should be about my character.
Of course.
The head of production said, she said to me, she said, we could get this on Epics tomorrow. She said, we don't want it on Epics.
No.
We want a Netflix. We Big want platform. It on Amazon. We want it on a network.
Right.
So, I mean, that's been one of the holdups. We'll see. It's not something I think about a lot because it's been 25 years now.
Hopefully, hopefully we'll see the fruition of that at some point.
I mean, before I die, please.
Because the keep cannot be the lasting impression of your cinematic work, you know. I mean.
Well, we have Pelts.
I
don't know if you ever saw that on Masters of Horror.
Oh.
Dario Argento did it.
Okay. Wow.
For, you know, an hour long. And I always think Pelts is one of the goriest things I ever wrote. And
I don't know that that
he made it gorier.
I do enjoy the gore, especially that I'm not going to give any spoilers away for Laura's reading Panacea, but the worm at the end. That was nice. That was very, very nice. Yeah.
I remember another writer saying to me, he said, I've never seen anyone die that way.
No, I thought I had the exact same thought. Like,
I made it up. I just thought that would be How do I get them to go where I want them to go? Oh,
I've got these worms here. Okay, let's use them. Yeah, that's perfect. Well, listen, we've taken up enough of your time. Really want to thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
It was great talking to you guys.
Very good.
Thank you so much.
If you
want to
do it again sometime, let me know.
Oh, excellent. Always. Well, when you know, when the next the last Christmas comes out, we'd be happy to have you back.
So Paul, let me ask you.
See you in November.
Perfect.
Oh, that's awesome.
Paul, let me ask you. I know you work with Barry Hoffman. I bought quite a few of his books.
Yeah.
So thank you for your signatures on those.
He brought over two suitcases full of
books. Two suitcases full of books, yeah. I really enjoy reading those. You know, I don't have too many bad habits, so I figure collecting a few F. Paul Wilson books is a good habit to start.
No, that's a great habit.
So
I fully encourage it.
But, yeah.
Oh, wait a second. This says The Beast in Me, a memoir, F. Paul Wilson. What is this? This is your memoir right here.
My quest to see the beast from 20,000 fathoms at age 10.
Oh.
My folks wouldn't let me go because of polio.
Well,
not because of the beast, but because there was no polio vaccine yet.
Oh.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Huh.
If you went with other kids, you increase your chances of catching polio. Hmm. I used to be a real big collector myself. And but I got over that. I used to collect Arkham House. I used to collect Shadow Magazine. It was a real sickness, and finally I got over it. But
I bet your wife helped you get over that that addiction.
Yeah. It gets to be expensive.
Yeah, it can.
Really.
Yeah, I had to choose between college tuition for the kids and collectibles.
All
so
right. Another F. Paul Wilson first edition sign. Sure, let's go with the F. Paul. All right, very good. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate
it.
We'll talk to you in November.
You
thank you.
As well.
Really appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
The Inside Flap. Oh, man. How great was that?
Good. Yeah. So good.
Awesome.
So much fun. My favorite part was when he said he had to go online just to remember the different parts of the secret history and to rely on other people's websites just to remember what exactly happened in the secret history.
That is true. That's funny, isn't it?
So funny. Yeah. Really cool.
Yeah, I don't think that's exactly what he said.
Yeah, close.
He
seems like a really great guy, though.
Yeah, he really
I'd like
does.
To go out and have a fajita with him.
Yeah. I'd like to know more stories, too, from his childhood, because I think a lot of what he's written about, like Andrew, you asked him about the Pine Barrens. He mentioned that was a formative experience for him at camps.
Yep.
And then he talking about writing that story about the haunted house story.
That's right. Well, we'll have him back in November.
I'd love to write a haunted house book, but I think that's too simple of a story.
The haunted air, the repairman Jack, the haunted air was a ghost story.
I forgot about that.
That's a good
one. So he has done that.
Yeah, he has. He's written it all.
He has written it all.
And for me, you know, my family comes from, you know, Jersey there, and they spent a lot of times there. And so, especially on the Jersey Shore, and I had even kind of forgotten about that. But for me, it was almost like, you know, talking to my grandparents again and reminiscing about different things.
About life then. Yeah.
Yep. Very cool.
Have you been to the Pine Barrens, Andrew?
I've driven past them.
I've never been in
But
them.
I've never either.
No.
I really want to go, though.
I kind of want to go, too.
Yeah.
And so interesting is as we're interviewing F. Paul, I get an email from Gauntlet Press. And so Gauntlet Press has had a partnership with F. Paul Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And he prints basically the first editions. And you can typically get signed first edition of F. Paul Wilson books through Gauntlet Press and Barry Hoffman. But just so happened to get an email from Barry Hoffman and Gauntlet Press, and there's two updates on
the Last Christmas.
Well, yep, the Last Christmas. Okay. Basically, the layout is complete.
The new repairman Jack.
Oh, that's exciting.
And and they want to ship them in September, but basically,
do you order one?
You have a chance. I haven't yet. But if you want a chance to order one of these books, you can order it now. Before they contact, the mass market.
Oh.
So there's a chance, you know, Gauntlet Press to order that, and then also the Silent One. By Tom Montalone and F. Paul Wilson.
Oh, yeah, Montalone, yep.
Uh-huh. The update there is they're awaiting tray cases and slip cases for The Silent Ones, the final book in the Nocturnia trilogy.
Wow. Mm. Have you guys read those?
No.
No.
Yeah, I haven't either. Mm.
maybe it's something we ought to look into.
Yeah,
yeah, sure. It sounds. I like the title, the Nocturnia trilogy. Sounds good.
Cool. Well, I think Laura has an F. Paul Wilson related game for us to play.
I have a little quiz.
Okay.
And this is going to be New Jersey authors.
New Jersey authors.
It is authors that you guys both should know. I think that you will know who they are.
Now, a question. Does Bruce Springsteen count as an author?
No. There are six New Jersey authors.
And she's holding up six fingers.
I did. I don't know why I did that.
I don't know why you I'm gonna take the under on this one.
Why would I have done that? I don't know. So basically just ping in whenever you think you know.
Okay.
I'm going to give out the book titles the further into it I go. So here's the first one. This person is a children's and young adult fiction writer who was extremely popular in the 1970s.
Dave. Judy Blume.
That's right. That is right.
Thank
she is
you.
From Elizabeth, New Jersey.
Yep, I had heard that before.
You know, I'm gonna just head on. I'm gonna head on up to the 7-Eleven for a Slurpee.
Okay, Andrew.
Let me know if this quiz is finished by the time I come back.
I'll let you know.
Oh, it's just the first question. Hang in there.
All right, this next one is going to be a little more difficult.
Okay.
This person's fiction, regularly set in his birthplace of Newark, New Jersey, is known for its intensity.
Dave, Philip Roth.
Oh man, that's good. Woo! I would not have gotten that, and I am a Philip Roth fan.
Newark, yeah, of course. He's great. All his books are set there.
You know? I just didn't remember that. Mm-hmm.
Favorite book of his?
A Human Stain.
Human Stain, yeah, that's a great one. That is a great one.
Andrew? Andrew's still here.
Portnoy's Complaint, perhaps?
No comment.
Okay, here's the number three.
Okay.
Widely regarded.
Oh, but let's go back to Judy Blume, though, for a second, because she, growing up, to me, she definitely had a lot of influence over I loved her books so much. I mean,
I even read
Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. I had no idea what it was about, but I loved it.
And Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing.
Super
Lover.
Fudge.
I may have read one book by Julie.
Really?
Judy Blume.
Yeah, who did you read when you were like in fourth grade and fifth grade?
You know, Stephen King and
not that young. You
know, no, I
really.
I started reading, you know, reading pretty young. Huh. I think really in first grade is when I started hitting the hard novels. and my fourth grader has started avidly reading this year, and he's completed the Hobbit, the Lord of the Ring trilogies. Completed the
that's impressive.
Completed the entire Harry Potter series, and now he's finishing up on the Golden Compass series.
Oh, I love those, Philip.
Oh,
Pullman.
That's going to be supposedly the next big HBO series.
Huh. Philip Pullman series,
his Dark Materials. Yep.
Well, they did a terrible movie with Nicole Kidman.
Not a good movie. So maybe the HBO show will be better.
I'm sure it'll be better.
Mm-hmm. That's a great. There's some problems with that trilogy just because of, I don't think the Christian right would like it at all just because of what he says about
atheism and the dust.
And souls and stuff like that,
It'll be interesting to see what HBO does with that.
Yeah, they might have to change that.
Tone that bit of it down a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, this person is widely regarded as one of the most prolific writers of our times. She has put out an average of 2 books a year.
Is it Joyce Carol Oates?
Yes.
Yes.
How do you know this?
Ooh, prolific. You say the word prolific.
That's right.
She cranks them out. You think F. Paul Wilson cranks them out. Now, He's got 55, but she...
She wasn't born in New Jersey, but she has lived the past 30 years in Princeton, New Jersey.
Okay, very good.
So they count her. New Jersey counts her as their own.
All right.
Yeah, that is also Dave's mother's favorite author.
Yeah, she loves herself some Joyce Carol Oates. Mm-hmm. I read the Blackwater about the Ted Kennedy and Chappaquiddick. Mm-hmm. That's really good. Really dark. Really depressing.
They are dark. They're very dark. All right, here we go. Andrew, you'll have a chance to be in this.
3-0. There's 3 more to go.
Ready?
You just need to sweep these next 3. He's moving the microphone away from his face. Come on. That's not that bad.
You could possibly get this.
He's putting his feet up on the table.
He's also wearing hiking boots for some reason.
You can shout from there. Sure.
Hiking.
All right.
One of the beat masters.
Dave. Allen Ginsberg.
Yes.
Yes!
Woohoo! He was born.
That's a bingo.
He grew up in Paterson, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned him most recently in the Mother's Day quiz.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
All right.
No memory of that.
Number 5.
Okay.
He is an early American writer, generally considered to be the first major.
Dave. is it James Fenimore Cooper?
Yes.
Whoa, man. That was a blind guess.
All right,
guess.
The last one. Okay, James Fenimore Cooper is from Burlington, New Jersey.
Okay.
I did like that movie, actually.
Yeah, with Daniel Day-Lewis.
I read the book, but I also...
Running through the woods
feverishly. That was Daniel Day-Lewis looking his best, also. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Okay, last one.
All right, here we go. Andrew, get ready.
Are you ready?
At the microphone. He's flipping me off for some reason.
Ready? Born in Jersey City, New Jersey, he writes novels and short stories, primarily in the science fiction and horror genres. His debut novel was Healer.
Dave, oh my God.
Dead silence from the room.
Oh, man. F. Paul Wilson, of course.
Yes, we just had him on, and you two are looking at each other like, I don't know who this is.
Obviously, I knew the answer to that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's why when she said Healer, literally the book you're going to recommend on the show, you clammed up.
Yeah, but I'm not as quick on the draw as you are.
All right. Well, can we get some game show music to close this out? Because that was, there we go. Once again, Dave dominated.
All right. Well, you know, 6-0.
You know, we asked Paul if he ever thought about wanting to get Repairman Jack to fix some situations. and you know what? I'd like to get Repairman Jack in here to fix some of these trivia. Yeah.
Okay, fix some of the trivia questions. Yeah. Okay.
That's really all right, funny.
Very good. Well, Laura, thank you for that game.
Oh, you're
really
welcome, Dave.
I thought it was
sorry,
fantastic.
Andrew.
I don't know. Andrew's bitching about over here, but great game.
I could not have done that
once again
against you.
So let's dive into some F. Paul Wilson books, though. Enough talking about the man. Let's get to the work.
Let's do it. Let's have Andrew start with his first book.
Yeah, awesome. That's a good idea. Let's go in chronological order. So we're gonna go Andrew Dowd with F. Paul's very first book.
So So basically, in 1976, the first novel that F. Paul Wilson published, and I think he was The Healer, and it's the Healer. It's Healer.
That's right. Okay.
And it's the Laneige Federation, and there's five books in the series, and the first book he published is actually the final book in the series.
Huh.
And I'll talk a little bit about that. But what I really liked about this book, and I read the online version. Now, I did order a copy, a signed first edition, which unfortunately was supposed to be here Monday.
Oh, Barry Hoffman, what are you doing?
No, not from Barry.
Not from Barry.
This, okay. I mean, think about it. This is back from 1976.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. And
that's really cool.
But what I really enjoyed about the electronic version is there was a foreword by F. Paul written in 2010 where he talks about his publishing experience and how naive he was basically in terms of publishing the book. And you know, and I thoroughly enjoyed that foreword. So a few things I'll share with you from the foreword. So he sold the book, and basically he went through med school, and he talked about when he's going through med school, he really didn't have time to write. But when he started working as a doctor, he had a little bit more free time. And that's basically when he wrote this book.
Oh, okay.
And had it published.
Wow.
And so basically, you know, the first publisher he sent it to basically bought the book.
Oh, wow.
You know, so,
wow.
And that had a lot to do with the person who bought the
his first short story,
right. which was Pard.
Oh.
And Pard is...
Well, Ratman was the very first short story he
sold. Very short story, which he sold back in... I don't know if we got the date on that.
I don't know.
But in this book, the foreword, he mentions he showed a short story, Pard, which is part of this book as well. And so in the foreword, he talks about he was waiting. He published the book. He kept waiting to see it on the New York Times bestseller list. and then he went into a bookstore, which was actually owned by the publisher.
Oh.
Expecting to see his book on the bookshelf.
Yeah.
One would think.
And this was, you know, 4 months after the book was first published.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, lo and behold, the book is no longer on the shelves. And so he calls his agent and he's like, what's going on here? And he's like, well, you know, after the libraries have bought their copies and everybody bought their copies, I mean, essentially that's what we do.
And you got to reprint that.
Well, and he basically is saying that, and then he's
that's
like,
it?
He's like, and pretty soon you'll be getting a letter in the mail where you can buy extra copies for pennies on the dollar.
Oh man,
you know. But that was his That was his debut novel.
That was indoctrination into the world of publishing.
Yeah, and the book, he said the book garnered actually very good reviews when it was first published. But I really enjoyed the 2010 foreword because it really talked about his experience, but also his perspective now, you know, because he obviously is not quite as naive as he was, I don't want to say how many years ago, 43 years ago.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, you can go to the Kindle store online, and I think it's on Kindle Unlimited. I was looking at it, but there's a collection of all the forewords that he's done for all of his books. So you can read that online.
Hmm. So, but definitely that was one of the, not only did I enjoy the book, but I really enjoyed reading the foreword in that one. So the book basically takes place in the year is 36. The main character in this book is Stephen Dalt. Mm-hmm. And Stephen Dalt is on a planet, and I believe the planet itself is called Quasi. He is basically sent because there is a spaceship that has crashed on this planet. So this is science fiction. This is the far future.
This is right up Andrew Dowd's alley.
Yes, it is. And so
it really is.
Yeah. So there's space travel and there's all these things. So
I didn't realize he started out with hardcore basic science fiction.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, not that it's basic, but I mean, right. Like straight genre.
Up science sci-fi.
Yeah.
And so Stephen is looking for the remnants of a crashed spaceship. The reason they're looking for the spaceship is there's a type of an experimental brain that was controlling the spaceship.
Oh.
And so they're basically trying to track it down. And the problem is a lot of these far-flung planets have gone back to like a feudal society.
Okay. Right?
And this is actually a pretty common theme in science fiction, that as humanity expands throughout the universe, and that a lot of the technology and things like that, it doesn't end up getting supported, right? Mm. So I guess we regress.
Mm-hmm. As we progress.
Yeah.
Interesting.
He has to get off the planet. And so he goes back up, and he comes back down dressed in, you know, local garb and stuff like that so that he can infiltrate and find out what's going on. But before he gets rescued, while he's being chased by these, you know, these guys on horseback and things like that, he has to duck into a cave because he's close to getting killed. So what happens is he goes into the cave. The next thing you know, he wakes up, and he's got this dead creature on his head. and that's when he remembers that everybody says, don't go into a cave on this planet.
Oh.
Because
that's a bad time for him to remember that.
Yeah. Because only of a thousand people that go into a cave, only one out of a thousand will actually come out alive.
Huh.
And so he turns out to be the one in a thousand. And so what happens is there's actually a microscopic slug that's in this creature. And so it lands on its head and it burrows into his brain.
Oh.
And it forms a symbiotic relationship.
Huh.
And so what ends up happening is he ends up being Stephen Dalt, and mostly refers to himself as Dalt for short. And the slug, he ends up becoming called Pard. P-A-R-D as in partner.
Right.
And so they form a symbiotic relationship. And
interesting.
So because of this relationship, he can heal himself. He can improve his anatomy. You know, it allows him to do amazing things. Mm. And so the book goes through different chapters. And so it starts in the year 36. And I believe the final chapter, or the final episode, I should say, is in the year 1231.
Hmm.
So it deals with
a long time.
Yeah, spanning 900 years.
Well, 1200 years. Yeah.
Okay, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not a math podcast.
Yeah. Leave the math to me, Dave. I'll leave the English to you.
Okay.
So it spans 1200 years.
Hmm.
And I won't give too much away, but he ends up becoming a healer and healing people.
Right.
Hmm. But one of the things that he has to heal is actually a mental illness that occurs, and it's called the horrors.
Oh.
And the horrors is a thing that attacks people out of the blue, like they'll be perfectly normal.
Uh-huh.
And the next thing you know, they're living with this horror inside their brains.
Oh.
Wow.
And so, you know, the partnership of Dalt and Pard.
Creepy.
Are actually one of the few people that's actually able to heal the horrors.
Huh.
Is it like going mentally insane or something?
And essentially, that's what happens is the people can no longer function.
Okay.
And they go into institutes. So basically, but the healer is the only person and the only treatment proven to work.
Okay.
And I think it becomes so effective that the cause of the horrors, which you do eventually find out,
mm-hmm.
it ends up stopping.
Oh.
Right? And so it ends mm-hmm. up stopping. And so you end up finding that out. But it's the story is following the healer, and you're following them through 1,200 years, and you follow them through different stories and different situations.
Mm.
You get to kind of see some of the things that you deal with when you live 1,200 years, that he has a couple relationships which he has to watch the people grow old and die.
Oh.
Wow.
He's, decided not to have children because mm-hmm. he just feels it would be too painful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, there's definitely good science in this book, definitely great fiction. There's five other books in the series, and I've read one of those books. And even though this book is the first published, the last in the series, I believe that some of the other books actually occur within the timeline.
Oh, that's 1,200 years.
Oh, that's very F. Paul Wilson, too, isn't it?
Yeah. Squeezing books into the timeline.
Yeah, it's interesting that his mind works that way.
And it does, doesn't it?
I don't think mine ever would never occur to me.
So I look forward to reading really the other four books in the series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of which I've already read because I want to see how it fits into the timeline.
Because there's a masterful way that he's planned it out.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a different type of brain. My brain's too linear for that, I think.
Well, you need an alien to infest your brain so that it can
that's what work harder. Need.
Or you can heal your brain to make it work better, I guess.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah.
So the book is Healer by F. Paul Wilson, published in 1976, and it's approximately awesome. 300
glorious pages.
Glorious pages. Yep,
science absolutely. Fiction.
Awesome. Very good. And that was awesome. Recommended by
Andrew Dowd.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of the Laneig Federation series, because clearly F. Paul never met a book he didn't want to put into a trilogy or a series or a cycle or something like that, which is great. It expands the universe of that world. And
I have one that's a standalone.
It's not part of any. Oh, you're right. It is a standalone.
So. I don't
it
think
is.
So.
Well, for now.
For now. That's true.
Laura Medicus.
So I reread Midnight Mass by F. Paul Wilson, and it was published in 2004. And so I read this, I think, maybe when it first came out.
Yeah, I remember reading this book too, and I didn't realize at the time when we read it,
I don't
it had
think
just
I realized
come out.
It was
so,
brand new
but
either.
I remember this book. This is a great book.
Yeah. So in his foreword, he states that he wrote this as a response to the romantic vampires. You know, the type of vamps
Twilight books
that are beautiful. They care about things like music and fine art and nice furniture.
Right.
I don't know if Twilight was out then, but definitely Sookie Stackhouse, The True Dead by Charlene Harris was out.
Mm-hmm.
And then the queen of all that was
Anne Rice. Vampire Lestat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Anne Rice. So these are not those vampires. So these are Bram Stoker's vampires. They're Nosferatu.
Mm.
They're Salem's Lot. And they are We Are Legion.
They're down and dirty.
They are lightning fast, cold, merciless, bloodthirsty, undead.
Ooh.
They are not pretty.
Hmm.
Yeah. So Wilson starts this book off with a Jewish rabbi wearing a yarmulke and a Christian cross running for his life through the empty streets of a small New Jersey town that has been taken over by vampires and their minions. So this town is basically where he lives now, because he said
he
lives
it
in
is,
Ocean
isn't it?
Township.
That's right, yeah.
And he describes this town in this book as being kind of like where he described it to us.
Huh.
So it's kind of interesting. So this is Zev, this rabbi. He's a kind-hearted, practical man, and he's very similar to Abe in the Repairman Jack stories.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar. So vampires have taken over Europe. They are now attempting to conquer the east coast of our country. And they use a human army of lowlifes as their daylight foot soldiers, because these are the Nosferatu type of vampires where they can't come out in sunlight.
Okay.
So they consume blood and they basically go insane at night.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Now, are they able to see their reflections in the mirror?
No, they're not.
Okay.
That's a Stoker. Stoker started that, though, I believe.
Hmm. Do they see their shadows?
No, because it's nighttime, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Well, moonlight.
Actually,
you can cast a shadow in the moonlight.
They do cast a shadow
right?
in the
yeah,
moonlight because
yeah,
there's
that's
characters.
Still a vampire thing.
Because when Zev is running through these empty streets,
uh-huh.
some of these vampires can fly.
Oh,
which is terrifying.
Right.
And
that's cool.
He gets a shadow and he hopes that it's just a shadow crossing the moon.
Right.
A cloud.
Uh-huh.
It's not a cloud. Oh. Yeah. So these vampires have a conquering strategy that I thought was really brilliant. So they turned the secular and the non-secular leaders of the community into vamps as soon as they come in. So when people see their
pastor,
that's
a smart idea. Yeah.
They're going to see their mayor drinking blood, maybe their school principal, and their mayor's drinking blood. They're participating in killings. It basically just demoralizes people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let's face it. The secular leaders are probably the first ones to sell out
to
everybody
sell out.
Else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that's true. And then also goes with the hopeless people are easier to conquer for sure. So this book is tightly written. The characters are very familiar Wilson characters. It's the warm, funny, wise, older Jewish guy, strong, silent, yet quick to fight young man named Joe, who's actually a Catholic priest.
Starts with a J, like Jack.
Oh, I didn't think about
that's
that.
Right.
And there's a young, caring, yet fierce young woman, Carol.
Oh,
who
yes.
actually is
right.
is a nun.
And is there some, so then no romantic...
There is a romance.
Oh, there is
romantic
a romance.
Piece to this.
Because I don't remember. I know it's been a while since I read this book,
yeah.
So I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you, but there is a little romantic piece to this. Yeah, that I liked.
Some vampire love, or are we...
Definitely not
okay.
vampire love.
Okay.
These vampires don't experience love. So these three people are the major players in the book, and the story is about them joining together to attempt to take their town back. From the vamps. And basically, also another interesting thing that F. Paul Wilson does here is the mythic power of the cross is used. You know, you get the scene, and I can picture it in my head as this rabbi with a yarmulke. He's also got his prayer shawl on, but he also is wearing that Christian cross
right,
around
yeah.
his neck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just an interesting theme that's in the book, and I feel like it's found in all of his books a little bit. He calls himself a lapsed Catholic. In the foreword to the book.
Wilson does?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he has that mysticism.
Definitely.
That
otherworldly kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah that mm-hmm. definitely you find in religions. You mentioned in the cults that he loves to talk about cults.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. So this book's really exciting. I love the descriptions of the abandoned cities. They go into Manhattan. Manhattan's empty.
Oh,
it's just vampires.
I love stuff like that. That's
so
great.
Exciting. I can just picture it. It's pre-9/11.
So what you're really saying is that F. Paul went old school on the vampires.
He did. Yes, he did. He went old school. I will say there is a lot of violence in this. It is a true horror story.
Okay.
With vampires. And this is 403 glorious pages of classic vampire.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I loved every minute of it.
Midnight also. Mass.
Midnight Mass. Mm-hmm. Very good vampire book.
So let me ask.
Mm-hmm.
You know... Is there, because I think a lot of the like new vampire books, I mean, they're friendly vampires.
I've read the new vampire
that you want to have
books,
over for dinner.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
they're hot, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
But
do more than have them over for dinner.
but this real book, and I, you know, it really is going back to terrifying vampires, bloodthirsty,
yes. Mm-hmm. yes.
ruthless. And so, yeah.
Like
and
you
so,
said, old school.
Old school.
Yeah.
And I admire that is when everybody's gone in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
That's
I think
right.
we talked about it.
Yes,
he's
basically.
He does. Yeah.
yeah.
He did it here. You're right. Good point.
You're right. Thank you.
He
Andrew.
Goes
ding,
the opposite.
Ding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Cause that was so hot, especially with Anne Rice and, I mean, the true dead, the Suki mm-hmm. Stackhouse stuff
yep.
from Charlene.
Very good. So Midnight Mass, mm-hmm. And that was written by?
It was written by F. Paul Wilson, Dave.
Oh,
you
F.
may
Paul
have heard
Wilson.
Of him.
Okay, very good. And that's
yeah.
recommended by?
Laura Medicus.
All right, so Midnight Mass was from 2004, so let's jump ahead 12 years
okay.
to 2016. And my book, and my name is?
Dave Medicus.
All right. Yes, it is. My book.
That threw you for a loop, didn't it?
I'm like, oh.
Hearing your name. I know. They sound
great.
So lovely.
I mean, again, another shout out to Zuzu in Thailand. Mm-hmm. I keep promising them lunch.
He has not bought them lunch.
And I still have not bought them lunch. And this has been like 6 months.
Yeah.
Tomorrow I'm tracking them down. Girls, I'm finding you. I'm buying you lunch tomorrow.
We also, I'd like them to sing some more stuff for us next year. Because I
yeah.
heard they're not graduating yet.
They're
yay.
Not. We got another year
so,
of them. Thank goodness for
yeah.
that. Our best
treat
singers,
them well.
For sure, yes.
Well, you could just fail them to keep them around.
Good idea.
Good
idea.
Idea.
All right. Anyway, the book I'm going to talk about is, and we talked about it with Paul a little bit, Panacea. This is the first book in the excellent ICE trilogy, and ICE stands for Intrusive Cosmic Entities. The idea behind that is that there are beings out there somewhere that are kind of messing with us and throwing things into the universe, from the universe to us.
Hey, listen.
Just to mess with
us. Hang on. You're messing with me because I'm halfway through this book right now.
Yeah.
And I haven't gotten to that part yet, though.
Sure, you have been, because the Panacea is one of these intrusive cosmic entities.
Okay.
Well, the funny thing is, he actually doesn't... and that Rick, one of the characters from the book, is the one who comes up with this ICE acronym. And it's not even mentioned until the middle of book two, for whatever reason.
Okay.
And he also, I liked that F. Paul gave a little a nod to Vanilla Ice, because he said, Rick says, ice, baby. So pretty funny. Anyway. So in our interview.
Well, I have a Jersey story for you. So I have to tell it.
Of course.
So
we're all Jersey.
My brother-in-law and my sister, they spent a lot of time in the Atlantic City casinos.
Okay.
And there my brother-in-law was with a big vanilla ice cream. And who should be walking towards him?
Oh, vanilla ice.
Vanilla ice.
Oh, no.
So, of course, they got, he holds it up.
Yeah.
You know, they make eye contact. Wow, they smile. Funny. And, of course, he's got selfies.
Yeah.
With vanilla ice and his vanilla ice.
That's actually very
really
fun.
Yeah.
That's very fun.
That is really fun.
And, you know, and vanilla ice is a really good sport. You know, he doesn't take himself too seriously or anything like that. I mean, you know, nice guy.
That's good.
That's actually not what I'd heard, but it sounds like he had a good experience with them, so that's good.
No, mine goes dun 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 dun.
Yeah.
Isn't he famous for saying that in court?
Yeah. Well, he's trying to say he didn't rip off Queen, right? Yeah.
Or,
no, mine goes dun 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 dun.
I forget which. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Anyway, so this book I compared, or this trilogy I compared it to two TV shows. One of them, The X-Files, because it has a male and female investigative team, and also there are some supernatural elements to it. And I said it was The X-Files crossed with another show because of all this action in the book. And also, it coincidentally enough, the other TV show that I mentioned, and I swear I did not plan this out, the composer of that TV show, you're right, ding, 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 the A-Team, that composer is none other than same guy that we've been featuring for the past 3 weeks, Mike Post, composer extraordinaire.
Wow.
Let's take a listen. I mean, we've got to take a listen to the theme song to the A-Team. So it starts out with little drums, you know, because it's kind of got that military commando unit, you know, and then, wait... Yes! That's a theme song right there.
That is a great theme song.
Classic 80s.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of evocative of like an Indiana Jones kind of feel to it.
Oh, but it is. Dun, 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 dun.
With the military snare drums there. And then we get a little drop down into a little Magnum PI bass guitar kind of groove going here.
Huh. Interesting. That's kind of very odd and coincidental that we've been mentioning Mike Post on every episode.
Yeah.
And then you randomly make an analogy with the Mike Post.
Right, exactly.
Show?
Yeah.
So who did do the Indiana Jones theme song?
That's
John Williams.
Okay.
So he's like the Mike Post of movie theme songs.
Okay.
They did Star Wars, Jaws, all these. Oh, here we go. There we go. Oh.
Sounds good. Again, Mike Post, if you're out there, I'd love a...
Yeah, we need to get Mike Post on the show. Oh, yeah, he needs to write a theme song for the Inside Flap. That's what he needs to do. You remember the show? Did you watch the show growing up?
I did watch it, yeah.
Hannibal, Howlin' Mad, Murdoch, B.A., Bad Attitude, Baracus, Mr. T. Did you know that Mr. T never said, I pity the fool on the show?
He didn't?
He never said, I pity the fool.
What did he say?
On the show. Well, he said all kinds of things, but he actually never said that.
That's hard to believe.
Weird.
Yeah. Well, just like Kirk never said, beam me up, Scotty.
Huh.
So there's the show Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a Mr. T type character in that movie. And I don't know, is it actually Mr. T who's doing the voice?
Oh.
of that character.
Yeah,
but it's like a Mr. T type guy and his little son.
Yeah.
You know?
I saw the movie a long time ago. I don't quite remember that.
My kids are big fans of that.
Also, in Casablanca, Rick never says, play it again, Sam. Hmm. Did you know that?
Did not know that, Dave.
He just says, play it. Play it. But anyway, speaking of Rick, one of our heroes in Panacea is named Rick, and the other one is named Laura. And, of course, as we talked about with Paul, it's funny how Rick and Laura rhyme with Nick and Nora, who are a married couple who solve murder mysteries while exchanging a smart repartee created by Dashiell Hammett for the Thin Man movie.
Oh, another Dashiell Hammett.
There you go.
Exactly.
Dashiell, yeah.
So we come back to Dashiell Hammett. All right. So in this book, Rick and Laura are not married, but they have certainly a lot of wisecracks in it, and they're kind of forced to work together as they go on a globe-hopping search for this panacea, which is a potion that if you drink it, it will cure whatever ails you.
Now, at that time.
Right, at that time, yeah. When you drink it. It doesn't give you everlasting life. Mm-hmm. It doesn't cure aging.
Because aging's natural.
Mm-hmm. But so not like the healer, right, when he's got this guy inside of him. And never mind, the healer is so, he lives 1,200 years, but does he, or I guess, no, we don't want to give any spoiler alerts. Okay, Andrew's giving me a look like, no spoilers.
No, I'm just wondering if this panacea is going to fix, are my children all of a sudden going to listen and be obedient? You know,
Is my wife going to
do everything that I want?
And it only cures any physical ailment you have there.
Yeah.
But of course, now there has to be some kind of conflict. Can you think of what's wrong with that? What's wrong with allowing this panacea into distribution across the globe? What could possibly be the problem with that?
Well, overpopulation.
Oh, there you go. And that's exactly right. Yeah. So that's what they talk about in the book.
And then the other thing that I found interesting, and then I thought of two other reasons why you wouldn't want to have a panacea on the market.
Mm-hmm.
Is you could use it for evil. Like if we decided that
our
families and everyone who like listens to this podcast were the best, we could in theory poison other people around us.
That's
drink
right.
Drink the panacea ourselves.
Watch everybody
and get
else
rid of
fall
a lot of
death.
People.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, if you, other political parties, you could, or countries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a mighty weapon if you think about it that way. And then the other thing that is in this book a little bit, certain religious people would believe that it's God's will. So this is definitely interfering with
certain
people would think would be God's will.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pretty powerful, those members of society.
Yep. Yeah. Even though this is just one of those, in Rick's mind, one of these intrusive cosmic entities, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, as we talked about with Paul, this would not be a F. Paul Wilson book without a couple of secret societies or cults in it.
Love that.
So we have a group called the Panaceans. Now, these are people who are devoted to this. It's called Ikhar, Ikhar,
uh-huh.
are devoted to this potion and to preserve it and to grow it and to give it to those people who need it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is a cult who are bent out to destroy the panacea. And now caught in the middle of all this is Rick and Laura, who are in search for the panacea to get it to this rich billionaire who's hired them because now he's dying and he needs it.
Hmm.
Interestingly enough, Laura's daughter has blood cancer and she's in a hospital dying. And Laura is kind of a skeptic. She doesn't believe there is a panacea.
She's a medical doctor too.
Mm-hmm. She's a medical examiner. Exactly. Yeah.
An ME.
So you find, and it's just fascinating. It reads so quickly as these guys go, and it's a thriller of a high order. There's chase sequences. There's an ancient poem with clues in it to help find the location of where these plants are grown.
Another thing F. Paul Wilson likes to do is he likes to have little drawings in his
book.
Ah,
yes.
And there's drawings in this
there
one.
There are drawings.
Like in all the Jack books, there's little drawings.
In this one cult, they're marked by tattoos, and so he's got little drawings of these tattoos.
Yeah.
That's true. That's really cool that he does that. I like that. I wish I'd ask him.
I like that too.
Ask
next
him
time
about
we
that
talk
in
to him.
November. Yeah.
He did say.
That's right. He promised us.
So
both the leads are very likable. Rick's an ex- Navy SEAL who knows how to kick a little ass, and he has plenty of opportunities to do so. He always carries around these zip ties, which is always finding creative uses for. Yeah, and there's that humor to it that he talked about. All throughout all three of these books, there's humor.
I wish more people would do that.
Yeah.
Some books it's not appropriate, but other books... I mean, you might think this vampire book that I just read shouldn't have any humor, but it had quite a bit of humor in it.
Yeah.
Well, as F. Paul mentioned, you know, it's important to create a break.
Yeah.
And you need that contrast.
You do.
Now I've read books from other authors where they're so intense, it just doesn't let up.
And it's like
running a marathon.
Well, it almost becomes boring after a bit.
When you become desensitized, but it's also like running a marathon as well. So, I mean, it's, you know, I think it's
you don't want to hit that proverbial wall.
And it becomes unbelievable as a reader. So then, like he said, he doesn't want you leaving a story. He wants you in that story.
In the story, yeah.
Because in life, our life's not like that. Our life isn't lived at a sprint. There's moments of boredom.
So this is the first one in the trilogy. The second one is called The God Gene. And this one takes Rick and Lara to a small, undiscovered island near Madagascar, where a heretofore unseen species of monkey is found, which just might be the missing link. And the third one is called The Void Protocol, and this one's a lot of fun. It's got the same rich billionaire in it. Now he's collecting a group of kids who have superpowers.
Oh, cool. I like the superpowers.
Invisibility, telekinesis, and levitation,
I love stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's really cool. And of course, they have to battle some forces of evil in it. And a lot more Repairman Jack and the Secret History come into that third one in particular. Especially towards the end.
What genre did you say this series is?
I know.
See, that's a great point.
Genre bending.
It is certainly a lot of science fiction in this. You could call it a medical thriller.
It's not really a medical thriller, though. Are they marketing it that way? The God Gene
in particular. When you get into the God Gene and it gets really deep into gene therapy chromosomes and DNA and a lot of other scientific jargon.
You know, Michael Crichton did that, though,
I had to read really closely to understand.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. But Paul did it in such a way where he makes it very, very readable, of course. He doesn't get too bogged down in the details.
You read these books really quickly.
Yeah, it flew by.
Yeah.
There's the elements of horror to these books. Some of the deaths in these books are very gruesome. The worms that I was talking about earlier, worms.
Oh, boy. Haven't gotten to that yet.
So, as you could come to expect from any F. Paul book, they're extremely well plotted. They're fascinating. The idea behind this trilogy, are these, like I was talking about, these intrusive cosmic entities. Love these. First one is called Panacea. And these are by F. Paul Wilson. And the F is for?
Frank.
Fun. I was going to say fun, but yeah, sure.
Francis.
Let me be frank with you. Francis, yeah.
It is Francis. Is it Francis Paul?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see.
Right.
I get it.
But these also could be read as standalones, too. So even if you don't have any idea about the Secret History or any Repairman Jack books, you would enjoy those.
And speaking of Repairman Jack, let's get to our...
Oh, thank you, Andrew. It's like you knew I was going to do that.
Worked really well.
The Tomb is the very first Repairman Jack book that came out, and this was written in 1984. So jump back. Exactly in chronological order. This is the book that introduces Repairman Jack. And interestingly enough, it would be another 14 years before the next Repairman Jack book was written. Yeah. So I read that he wrote that he knew there was going to be a lot of interest in creating a series around this character, but he already had the idea for the adversary cycle in his mind in these other novels, and he wanted to get those out. And so he kind of put Repairman Jack on hold.
I'm guessing he got married and had kids around 1984.
You think that's
what I'm thinking?
The code
is happened there, yeah.
Well, I don't know, because he did write. I mean, he wrote after that. He wrote, you know, Reborn and Reprisal, and he wrote the rest of them. But there could have been a break for kids. That's a really
good point.
That is a great point.
They could have been quite young during that time period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this character, Jack, is a great character, just a classic hero. He's not, you know, so many books now have the anti-hero who are bogged down with a something tragic that happened in their past. Jack is a straight-up a hero. He's an average, ordinary guy. He doesn't stand out in crowds by choice. He allegedly doesn't have a Social Security number. Never is any last name for him is ever mentioned.
And one of the things is, I was reading a Repairman Jack book.
Yes.
And the guy talks about taxes.
Oh,
and he's
yeah.
like, yeah, he's like, yeah, yeah. He's yeah. like, oh, I don't know what taxes are.
That's
I
right. Mean, yeah.
Who wouldn't love that?
Yeah. Exactly. He's of average height, an average build, average hair color. But what he does do and what he can do for other people is he fixes things. He's a fix-it guy. And yes, he only works for cash.
I wish I only worked for cash.
Yeah, right? Save a lot of trouble. Yeah. So if you're having a problem and you can't go to the cops about it, RJ, Repairman Jack, is your guy. In this book, he's tasked with finding a necklace that is stolen off the neck of an old woman from India who is dying in a hospital room in Manhattan.
Hmm.
Also, concurrent with this, it's been 2 months since his girlfriend Gia has broken up with him. Now, you guys all
remember
Gia.
Yeah,
yep. yeah.
She's with him throughout the whole series.
Oh, yeah.
So when this book starts out, you know, she actually dumped him because she found out what he did for a living.
Oh, and I don't blame her.
Yeah, she did not, was yeah. not, did not care about that.
No.
So he wants to get her back. So he's going to help her find her aunt who has mysteriously disappeared. So, of course, this being an F. Paul book, mm-hmm. these two plots are going to find a way to intersect.
Mm-hmm.
There's a crisscross.
Crisscross, yep. Mm-hmm. Another Repairman Jack book.
He has some interesting stuff in Panacea, too, about coincidences. And I wonder what his attitude as a person is to coincidence,
point,
or if it's just the writer in him that really enjoys
maybe.
Them.
Yeah. Well, he did say he would write something, and then he said
go
he
back
would
and
just kind of find a way. Well, you do that, but also find a way for these things to come together. So
yeah.
I think he just kind of lets his brain do it, and it works. Huh. It works out. So there's a history to this necklace that is traced back to an ancient Indian evil, and Gia's daughter Vicky, her life is put in peril. Let's take a listen to a clip from The Tomb.
Jack nearly tripped over his own feet in his rush to the phone. Gia, that you? Yes, it's me. Her voice sounded flat, almost resentful. God, it's been a long time. 2 months. Forever. He had to sit down. I'm so glad you called. It's not what you think, Jack. What do you mean? I'm not calling for myself. If it were up to me, I wouldn't be calling at all. But Nellie asked me to. His jubilation faded, but he kept talking. Who's Nellie? He drew a blank on the name. Nellie Payton? You must remember Nellie and Grace, the two English ladies? Oh, yeah, how could I forget? They introduced us. I've managed to forgive them. Jack let that go by without comment. What's the problem? Grace has disappeared. She hasn't been seen since she went to bed Monday night.
This is a top-notch horror thriller,
mm-hmm.
and not only does it kick off the Repairman Jack series, it's also tied into the Adversary Cycle, which is just a great...
Adversary Cycle that starts with The Keep, right?
It starts with The Keep,
The Keep
yes.
is excellent. If you have not read that, that'd be a great place to start.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did
yeah.
you like The Keep, Andrew?
I mean,
that's
did.
A modern
that's,
classic.
That's kind of horror a little bit.
That's deep horror.
Deep horror,
yeah. absolutely. Also, The Touch, Reborn, and Reprisal.
Yeah.
The Tomb has some intriguing monsters. This is where we get to discover the Rakashi, which is an alien/shark-like creature.
Oh, yeah.
There's ancient curses in here. All this is in the tomb. What the tomb does not have is a tomb. Nowhere is a tomb in the actual book.
Huh.
So he said that the publisher wanted it to sound like another one of his books, The Keep.
Hmm.
So...
marketing.
They called it The Tomb, yep. Huh. Simply marketing.
So they wanted the marketing tie-in. Now, I will say that I was researching F. Paul Wilson books,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And I went online, is I found a lot of his books are translated into German.
Hmm.
And, you know, and I
think it's been translated into 23 languages,
yeah,
I think.
But it's interesting is like when I go on Kindle typically looking for books,
mm-hmm.
it's not showing me, you know, German versions of the books. But for F. Paul Wilson's books, he must have a, you know, massive following in Germany. Because again, you
either that or Amazon knows your browsing history. They've seen you order
Struvelpeter,
and, and they're suggesting German books for you. Yeah, no, he's got a massive following everywhere. So, yeah, interesting. Well
deserved.
That's our F. Paul Wilson show, huh? How about that?
Yeah, I feel like we could have gone on and on and geeked out.
We could do a lot more. Maybe in November we'll do another F. Paul Wilson show. Yeah. We'll certainly have him back on. It was a lot of fun talking about him. His books are just so much fun to read. I hope that comes across when we're talking about him.
I mean, here's the thing. Leading up to this interview, mm-hmm. I have been on a third link with you guys on the cell phone. So I have been party to some super geeky text messages between the two of you guys that I have just been copied on. And I remember one day I was in a meeting and I just looked down. I'm just like, oh
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Like 15 messages.
A lot of great repairman Jack talk. Yeah. It's been great going back. Preparing for the show, I really want to go back and reread a bunch of the repairman Jack books.
Yeah, I'd like to do that
too. Certainly want to go back, reread The Keep, find out what else I have. I mean, I know I haven't read all 55 of his books, so I have to go back and check some of the other ones out. Some great, great books.
And then all this week on Instagram and Twitter, we'll put up some photos of different
stuff that Andrew has collected. His first editions over here.
Yeah, I've got 17 first editions from F. Paul.
Oh, wow.
Sitting there to take a look at.
Yep. Exciting. He had two wheelie suitcases he brought over here.
Now, I remember, I think to complete my collection, I wanted to get a signed first edition of The Tomb. Mm-hmm. And basically, I couldn't get that. So I'm sure now I go back and look, I can probably find it online. Yeah. But that was the one that's the one book that I haven't gotten. Yeah.
That's your white whale. That is your white whale.
Yeah, so I need to get that. Need to look for that. And then this week I'm looking forward to Healer, my sign.
Oh, getting that one.
Getting that one as well.
Amen. Yeah.
That's cool.
All right, guys. Well, we really hope you've enjoyed this episode. It's a very special. Mm-hmm. You know how they used to say that about TV shows? It's a very special Growing Pains. This was a very special
The Inside
Flap. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please, if you've enjoyed the show, please go ahead and tell a friend about it. You know, spread the word. Let's build this grassroots style. Give us a like on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Hit us up. Contact us. Let us know what you think of the show. So we really appreciate it. Next week, we'll have an interview with Chris Sorensen, audiobook narrator and author of The Nightmare Room.
And coming up later this month, we will have MCA Hogarth and J.D. Barker.
J.D. Barker coming up in June. So got some good guests coming up for you. So.
And I hope we don't have another trivia game coming up.
I'm gonna take a break from that. That one was, I felt pretty bad about that.
6-0. That was a shutout. Love.
I'll take it easy. I might do a Father's Day reboot.
Serena Williams tennis match. 6-0. Set one.
I thought for sure, Andrew, you might get the last one.
Well, I did know the last one, but Dave here is all hopped up on caffeine. No chance.
Thanks,
guys.
You
made him happy.
Yep. We appreciate you listening. My name is Dave Medicus. Thank you.
Andrew Dowd.
Reality is what trips you up when you walk around with your eyes closed. F. Paul Wilson. We recommend The Healer, Midnight Mass, and Panacea. Our audiobook is The Tomb, narrated by Joe Barrett, and all of these are by the legendary F. Paul Wilson.
Well, my patients who know me, they gave me scotch and bourbon.